going on? This is Joakim Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I'm here with Keith Rantz of Bull Scripted again. Keith, glad to have you back on, brother. It's always great to talk with you. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Living a dream after that big win against the Charlotte Hornets yesterday. Kind of a surprise. Charlotte's a pretty good home team. They're awful on the road, but they had a pretty good home record. And to see the Bulls come out and play that strong, it does, you know, even though it's a win, they needed a win. You know, I don't know how you feel about this, if you want to see them lose every game. But, you know, obviously we want to be in the bottom four. But I think it was time to have a win, at least to help these young guys gain some confidence.
Oh, no, I'm definitely on the same page with you there. I think losing the last game was a heartbreaker. I was really hoping for a win to kind of boost Lowry's confidence and get him out of the mini slump that he was in. And I think last night should do a lot for that. You know, shot over 50%, ended up with 24 points, 12 rebounds, and a win. Was key to the win down the stretch, made a lot of clutch plays. So, you know, if we're going to win, that's definitely the kind of win we want. We want Dunn and Lowry leading the way. If that leads in a W, we'll take that every night.
Yeah, I agree completely. One guy I definitely want to start out talking about is Chris Dunn, because I feel that in the last 2 to 3 weeks, he's really starting to show signs that this kid could be something special. He's got the talent, everything you would potentially need to me to be a great point guard, a multiple all-star as far as physical skills, mental skills. The only question to me is, can he shoot the outside jumper well enough? And I don't know if you found this, but I think in most Bulls Twitter sectors, there's a significant percentage of fans, for whatever reason, want to discount Chris Dunn. I've never seen nitpicking on a young player like I have on this kid. So, you know, the year starts out, too many turnovers, way too many turnovers. And the next thing, you know, he's not getting to the line. Next thing, you know, last night he plays 41 minutes, has one turnover, and he didn't shoot the ball well. Do you feel the same way, or am I just imagining things?
Oh, no, you're not imagining things. It's like the kid can't do anything right. He shoots over 50% of the night, but he has three turnovers. It's the end of the world. He has 12 assists to one turnover, and he shoots 33% on the night, but still gets 20 points. It's a giant ordeal. So I guess fans are just going to have to learn to accept he is a second-year player who might as well be a rookie with the amount of minutes and opportunity he was given with Thibs in Minnesota there. I don't understand it. You think after all of our point guard struggles and our point guard roulette that fans would just be happy that we have somebody who has potential and is showing, you know, the grit on both ends of the floor. He isn't getting to the line as much, but he also doesn't get calls.
Right.
He's gonna have to work on his free throw shooting for once he does start getting calls, because they are gonna come. He gets bodied on the way to the rim half the time on his takes. So, you know, he was 8 out of 24 last night, but there's probably, you know, 3 to 5 drives that should have been accredited to him with a foul that would have taken 4 shots, 5 shots off of his, you know, his field goals and added to his percentage. So there's a lot of, I don't understand the hate either.
Yeah, part of that.
At the end of the day,
part of that problem could be rectified if he actually had a coach who wasn't so timid with the officials. That's number one to me. Number two, he's still a young player. He's not getting the officials' respect. But he had 6 free throw attempts last night. Yeah, you know, one of the guys who I saw tweet about it is a guy who's a Kirk Heinrich lover, and I just wanted to, I had a laugh. I mean, this Kirk Heinrich is a guy that would go an entire month and have single digit free throw attempts. You know, when he was playing, I've never seen a guy get less, you know, draw any contact or just be more pathetic when it came to taking it to the rim. And you know, he's criticizing Chris Dunn because he's not good at drawing contact. Give me a break.
Well, and I think the other thing that Bulls fans need to realize is LaVine isn't back yet. Right now, it's the Dunn and Lowry show. Dunn is not going to be our leading scorer every night. You know, we've talked about it before. Realistically, we want Dunn to be a 15-5-5-2 guy every night. with minimal turnovers. And that's exactly what he can be. He's been proving that he can put up that 15-5-5-2 stat over and over again. And when LaVine gets back, him and Lowry are both going to elevate their game. Lowry will stop being the main focus of the defense. Dunn won't have to take so many forced shots and try to make things happen because they'll have another option. So right now, Dunn's playing a bit out of his comfort zone, and he's improving while he's doing it. So I don't see how fans can be upset or complain about anything he's doing currently.
Well, you know why it is, and I had this tweet last night, and I'll read it as I tweeted it. I've noticed an overly critical analysis of Dunn from some sectors of the fan base. He's done so many good things, far too much nitpicking on the kid. And then I finish with, it's probably a deep psychological reaction to protect their embarrassing takes on the Butler trade. And I really feel that's true. Dunn was the third part of that trade, in essence, right? He was the third best piece. And if he's going to be a potential all-star or a very good player at minimum, or, you know, a contributing, at worst, to me, he's going to be an excellent defender at the point guard position and a guy who's going to be a rotation player. But if he's better than that, and he, to me, is showing signs that he is, then that really makes these takes, all the outrage, all the worst trade in history, it's embarrassing for them. You know, and I know what it's like. I hate to admit when I'm wrong. I think it's pretty clear now, potentially, that I could have been wrong on Valentine. I expected Valentine to be better than what he was. I thought he had all, you know, potentially one or two, three times all-star potential. Poor man's Paul Pierce is what I call him. You know, right now I'm starting to readjust my take on him. I think he's going to be a rotation player. Really nice piece off the bench that could hit the three. But is he going to be special? Probably not. You know, I was probably wrong in that assessment. I think the haters should reevaluate their evaluation of Chris Dunn, and more importantly, the Butler trade.
Oh no, I agree there, and we all do it. You know, our hot takes tend to sway our opinions and how we have to approach things because, you know, sometimes our pride doesn't allow us to just go, hey, you know what, I was wrong, I was off. You know, at the beginning of the season, I was rooting for Jerry and Grant's demise. Not that I had to root too hard, because I wanted Dunn to start because I wanted to see what he had. And obviously, it's never really a good thing to root against your team's point guard. But in that situation, I wanted to be right about Dunn. You know, I wanted him to get the chance, and I wanted fans to see with the message that I had been pushing on him and the potential that he has. Now we've seen that. And Grant even looks more comfortable in his role off the bench. So I think the move to making Dunn the starter has worked out for everybody in a way.
Yeah, I think people just need to just be honest and reevaluate the hate. And I remember in 2009 when the Bulls had two number one picks, and the second pick was Taj Gibson. And it was a guy by the name of DeJuan Blair. I don't know if you remember him on the University of Pittsburgh. He was predicted to go almost in the lottery, and he fell all the way to the second round. But when we got to that pick, in that draft, and let me see when he went. Taj went 26th overall, and when the Bulls took him, the room I was at was just apoplectic about that pick. And you got to be honest with yourself, and you have to say, you know what, we were wrong on that. We were wrong on a lot of these things, and I think we were wrong on the Butler trade, especially to see how that's working out in Minnesota. I thought, how about David Nwaba? I mean, this kid, 5-7 last night in 32 minutes, a +8, 11 points, incredibly athletic. I'm starting to think this kid might be better than just a rotation player. In fact, I had a dinner the other night where we were arguing, is he on your go-forward list? And to me right now, he absolutely is. What's your take on David Nwaba?
Oh, there's no doubt that he should be on the going-forward list, and luckily for us, he's a restricted free agent. So he shouldn't be going anywhere. I don't see him getting any crazy offers that would deter the Bulls away from matching. So essentially in the offseason, if Nwaba is not brought back, I will be extremely upset. Because he does, you know, he does everything on the floor. He brings that energy that you need. I've referred to him as Ronnie Brewer 2.0 with his backdoor cuts. I don't see a reason not to keep the guy. We got extremely lucky to get a hold of him. The Lakers were in the middle of their roster moves, and before they could, you know, do their maneuvering the way that they needed to end up re-signing Nwaba, the Bulls snuck in and grabbed him, which is turning out to be, you know, a fantastic move.
Yeah. Well, especially when you consider, I was reading how they acquired him. The Lakers, I think, were trying to just put him on waivers and hoping that he would go unclaimed. And in doing so, they would be able to sign Pope, you know, KCP, and then still keep Nwaba. That was their goal. They didn't want to get rid of him. And in retrospect, what a horrible move. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Pope, and I think this kid, I'm just shocked that people haven't seen. I'm shocked the Lakers let him go. I really am, because he just shows so much to me athletically, and it's good that, you know, even after a serious ankle injury, he seems to be back. And that's just huge.
Oh, no, I have plenty of Lakers fans that are followers that I follow back that I've seen multiple comments of, we want Nwaba back. Why did we get rid of Nwaba? And they're right. They should be upset. It was a risky move, you know, to put him on waivers and hope he'd still be there by the time you were done making all the moves that you needed to make, and the Bulls lucked out.
Yep.
Having that availability that we talked about previously was beneficial.
Well, Nico's back. Love to get your take on the great Nico Mirotic and his performance last night. Let's see, he was 2 of 7 in just under 15 minutes, 1 of 3 from three, but a plus 9 with 6 points. So obviously he does have that ability to hit the three and thus bring out the power forward on the opposition. On the opposing team, what was your take on Nico's performance last night, and what's your feeling on him in general?
I think Nico's performance was a Nico performance. It's kind of what we expected. It's his first game back. He might improve a little bit. Essentially, he's just saving us from Felicio, the $32 million man that's keeping a seat warm. So I think it's a good thing. For now, obviously, I still hope he gets traded in some form of a cap dump trade that we take on a first-round pick in at the deadline there. That would be fantastic, because I don't see him being a piece long-term, and I really don't think he's worth his contract to, you know, pick up his team option for next year. But right now, yeah, no, it's definitely was a boost to have him back. It was kind of funny to see him and BP on the same unit. When Nico had that block, Bobby actually yelled, "Good block, Nico," or "That's right, Nico," something along those lines, hyping him up. So that was kind of funny to see. Have a little bit of a drama story going on with the Bulls. So that was fun. I mean, but Nico was Nico. He didn't come back and show March Nico in December like we would like. So I don't see a reason for him to stick around.
So you think he's going ahead of Portis? Or out of those two, what's your future predicted? What's going to happen with each of them?
At the end of the day, I do think Nico is a better player than Portis, but he's very similar to Lowry, and he makes $13 million. BP makes $1 million on his rookie contract. So, you know, BP's got next year left on his rookie deal that they already picked up the option for. That is a very cheap backup. I don't see Bobby as ever being a starter anywhere, but he does bring good energy in the nights that he's on. He brings a good amount to the table. So I'd keep Bobby over Nico strictly because of the cap situation. $13 million for Nico is a lot of money. And that's why I see any team that's trading for him isn't going to be trading for him because they want Nico or Nico services going forward. They're going to be trading for Nico because they want to dump a longer, worse contract and decline Nico's option for next year. So I think that trade would bring the most back for us, and it makes the most sense cap-wise.
Do you think I agree. I don't know if you saw the highlight of Portis when Markkanen hit a huge three at the end of the game. I think there were 2 minutes left in regulation when he hit a big three. And Nico was all excited. The whole bench was excited except Portis, who was just staring out there. No reaction whatsoever. And I felt like, you know, Portis had a nice night last night. He was 4 for 4 from the field, but I don't know. I just took it as the reaction to me was pathetic, you know, for a teammate, for a big shot like that. And I don't know, am I looking too much into it? Or
no, you're not looking too much into it. His reaction was pathetic. It's not the kind of, you know, I guess, culture that you'd like to build is, you know, secretly rooting for the other guy's success, but that's you also got to look at Bobby's side of the coin and understand it. He's been here longer. He's been putting in the work. He was him and Lowry before Blakeney came in the picture were the two youngest prospects. So, I mean, you can understand it. It's just like you going for a promotion at work against somebody. You're rooting for his demise. It doesn't matter that you both want what's best for the company. You want the job. So it's bad. It's not good for the culture. It's a bad look for Portis. But I kind of understand both sides of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is a really bad look for Portis, though, to me. I mean, I understand your frustration with it. And everything you stated there is true, but... Gosh, your team, it's on a huge losing streak, and to see a shot like that, you'd like to see some reaction, some excitement.
Oh, no, yeah. And after losing 10 in a row, just wanting the confidence for the team, being excited for your teammates, and like you said, Bobby did contribute a good amount last game, but that probably had to do with saltiness. You know, he felt that he should have been out there having the chance to take the shot because he did or was playing well. So, you know, it is a horrible look for him. I understand both sides of it. I don't think it's good for the team. I don't think it's good for Portis. But like I said, at the end of the day, BP makes under $2 million. Nico makes $13 million next year. I think you take the cheaper route that allows you to sign somebody else that's going to impact you more than Nico will.
What about I'd like to talk a little bit about some of these prospects now, the top four that we've gone through, and get your updates. I want to make this kind of like a regular segment where – hey, what's the latest with these kids that we're all talking about? Let's start with Eitan in Arizona, who is, I think, your favorite. How's he been playing lately? I know he had a big game earlier this week. Who was it against? Texas A&M or Texas?
Texas A&M, yeah.
And how did he do?
He fared pretty well. I think he was 13 and 11 around that effect. Eitan's my favorite just based on his NBA potential, his long-term potential, and his fit next to Lowry. I wouldn't call Eitan the top prospect skill or experience-wise. I think that title would go to Doncic, and I do think Bagley is more advanced in some aspects of the game than Eitan is, but you can't teach 7'1", 250, and you can't teach a 44-inch vertical. I think a lot of Eitan's problems come from lack of motor, as they like to call it, but I think that's boredom. He's a player that probably should have gone straight to the NBA. This one-and-done rule kind of does that kind of stuff to high prospects, and Lowry didn't look good in the Arizona system. You know, coming out of Arizona, it was believed Lowry couldn't defend, Lowry couldn't rebound. You know, he was a one-dimensional player, and he just didn't have the motor, the know-how to get the extra kind of stuff done. So I don't know if it's systematic in Arizona, the way they play, the way the coach goes about things, or if Aiton's just simply bored because he looks like, you know, a grown man amongst little boys out there, and I'm sure it's not fun.
Yeah. How about you mentioned Doncic? Let's hear about how he's played lately. And I've been reading a lot of interesting takes on. I think it was you. We're going back and forth on Twitter. Might have been wrong on this, but you know he's been competing at a very high level, right? And he's succeeding at a very young age. I mean, I think there's natural, just as fans here in the NBA, just kind of a natural reaction. Oh, he's a European, right? And a little bit like he's not tough enough. I mean, there's just a general stigma still, I think, to some degree about European players. You know, Ricky Rubio is never achieved how great he was supposed to be. A decent player, but, you know, never reached it. What makes this kid different?
Well, simply like you said, he's been playing with Real Madrid since he was 16. He's been practicing with Real Madrid since he was 13. So he's the definition of a prodigy. The kid has dedicated his life to the sport. You can't deny his skill level. Obviously, the only question is his athleticism. I'd prefer an athlete. I think LaVine and Doncic are fairly similar. So I prefer to avoid getting redundant. I like Eitan because of the fit. I think this top four class is too close in talent, at least right now. Come draft night, obviously, if there's a clear, you know, if Doncic is the obvious best available pick by miles, you have to make that pick if you have the top pick. But currently, I think they're all just a little too close in potential to not go fit. which is where I stick with Ayton. But Doncic is unbelievable. But yes, you have the majority of the Bulls fan base go, watch, Gar's going to draft another white European guy. Mark it up right now.
And
it's just like, well, if the white European guy is the best available, why are you going to be upset about this? I think the kid brings a lot. I call him the 6'8 Steve Nash because he can facilitate and shoot, and he is white. So it's an easy comparison to make. But no, I really don't think we can go wrong top four, man. As long as we stay in position to get one of these four, adding an 18 to 20-year-old player with future star potential, which I feel all of them have, including MPJ, if he's, you know, medically cleared and fully healthy and ready to go. We've both expressed our concerns with spinal injuries and back injuries because they never seem to go away. But if we land in the top four, man, we really can't go wrong.
What about Trae Young? I just saw him last night, and I thought he was kind of an intriguing prospect. I don't think he's big enough, really, to compete at the highest level. But, I mean, to really be – and take that wrong. I think he'll be in the NBA and be a contributor, but I don't think he's going to be worth a top four pick. But I've been hearing a lot of people – he's getting a lot of vibe lately, and he played very well last night. He's extremely quick, good shooter. What's your take on him?
I think he's fun to watch, but he falls into, he could be the next Steph Curry, or he could be exactly what everybody avoided Steph Curry because of. Like you said, he's a little undersized, but he has great ball handling. He has limitless range. I feel like half of his jump shots he takes are closer to the half court line than the college 3-point line. So I think he's a risky pick. He's not somebody I'd go for top four, top five. Because of his size, but he's also the kind of prospect that could end up with a Curry-like potential that has people scratching their heads and going, damn, we really messed that one up. You know, we ran away because of his size and all the reasons that everybody ran away from Curry, and here we are again. But there's a lot of crazy comparisons in this draft. You know, Knox kind of reminds me of a mini Greek freak. He's a little smaller, just as lengthy, really just needs a shot. Now you got Ayton, who you can compare to a number of big men. Bagley, who you could probably compare to Anthony Davis. There's so many good prospects in this draft, and that's why I think getting more first-round picks, however that is, whether that's taking on cap, you know, packaging Rolo and Holiday to a contender, getting extra firsts to take multiple shots in the first round of this draft or trade up with two later picks to get into the back end of the lottery, I think that's going to be our best route to rebuild this team the right way. Cap-wise, you can't go wrong with first-round picks. I don't know. This draft class is amazing. We picked the perfect time to suck, and hopefully we only have to suck this year. I'd rather win 10 games this year than win 60 games total over the next 3 years. So do it right. Stink it up this year. Have a good off-season. And let's try to sneak in as an eighth seed and get these young guys some playoff experience next year.
Is there anyone, you know, Bagley, obviously we got the top four, Porter, the ones we all talked about. Outside of that four, give us one name that you really like that we should check out in the next week or two, that you think has the ability to potentially get into that top four.
Miles Bridges and Mikal Bridges. I'm not positive how to pronounce his first name.
So Miles is with Michigan State. Everybody knows him because I'm a huge
Mikal is with Villanova.
So tell me about Mikal. I don't know as much about Mikal.
He's kind of your 3-and-D prototype. Good shooter, great athleticism, solid defensively. I believe he's 6'7". He's got good size. So he kind of fits the mold of the 3-and-D kind of guy that we're looking for. Maybe Young Covington type mold of a player.
Yep.
There's a lot of talk about him sneaking up. Him and Bridges are, you know, kind of in the same mold, same position, same category. So they'll probably be fighting each other for lottery position throughout the year. But both Bridges would be somebody to keep an eye on. I really want us to get somebody athletic, you know, at the small forward or for a big to complement Lowry. I just don't see the point of overloading. We watched the 76ers overload on three centers. and two of them are gone, and they have one left. Obviously, Embiid's great, but he still hasn't played a full season, and he's on a max contract starting next year. So,
yeah,
I don't want to overload. I'd prefer to fill out the top five that we got. You know, our starting five, we already got done. Levine comes back healthy.
Markkanen.
There's two, and then we got Markkanen. So I really think we need to aim small forward, big. Come later on, we might have a better idea. Maybe towards the end of the season, we feel Lowry can play the five in this current NBA, and then maybe Bagley's the way to go. But as things play out through the year, I think it'll be easier to get a gauge on what we should do. So obviously, if Levine comes back and he's not good, Doncic goes to the top of the board.
Yeah, I know people are just freaking out if we don't get in the top four. If we end up with Miles Bridges and you go into next year with Dunn at point guard, Levine at the shooting guard position, Miles Bridges at the small forward position, you know, Markkanen at the four, and it, you know, if they still hold on to Lopez, that is one exciting young team to be following for the next 3 to 4 years. And I think that is something that I would be ecstatic about. So, you know, I understand the focus on the top four. We got to get top four. I think Miles Bridges is a guy that I keep your eye on because I do love that kid.
Oh, no, and that's the best part about this draft is it's deep enough to where if Levine does come back and, you know, we do start outperforming ourselves and we don't make the trades that we should in order to stay in the top four, we're still going to get a good prospect. There's plenty of talent all the way through the lottery, whether that's Kevin Knox, Colin Sexton, Trey Young, Miles Bridges, Mikal Bridges, Mo Bamba. You know, it's going to be so hard to not get somebody with future NBA potential in this draft. Obviously, the top four is where, you know, the almost guaranteed future all-star talent is, and we want to be there. But if we're not, it's not going to be the end of the world, I suppose.
No, amen. Keith, you always bring it, brother. Did a great job. Just one final question for you this week. We got the Knicks tonight. We got the Celtics at the UC. The Celtics at the UC on Monday. The Jazz at the UC on Wednesday. And then Friday we have the Milwaukee Bucks and then Sixers back here on next Monday. So it's a tough – I mean, these are all good teams coming up for the most part outside of tonight, obviously. With the Knicks. Even the Knicks are decent, right? They're about 500 team. So, I mean, it's going to be rough over the next few games. Do you see them getting a win over the next five games?
I'd prefer them not to get a win, unless it's another game like last night where Lowry and Dunn are the reason that we win. I'm all right with losing the next 6 to 10 games before we get another win. And that's what fans got to realize, is the only thing that really matters is the players like Dunn, Lowry, Valentine, maybe Portis in there. You know, our young guys that are still on rookie contracts, that's all that matters game to game, is if they're performing well, they're doing well, even if we get blown out of the water. You got to look at it as a good game because they're getting the experience, they're playing against the best players in the world, and they're preparing for next year while we help ourselves remain in position for a great draft pick. So I don't think we'll get a win. I think if we do, it'll be tonight. We'll get two in a row. But I really don't want to beat the Knicks because the Knicks are teetering on that. Do we start tanking and go for the lottery, or do we try to make it into the playoffs? I'd rather push them towards the let's make the playoffs. So possibly trading Joakim Noah and taking on their first-round pick for taking on the cap with some other stuff becomes a possibility.
Sounds good, my man. Keith, great talking to you, brother. Looking forward to talking next weekend, too. And all the best to you this week. And looking forward, again, to having you on. So keep us updated on these prospects, and let's touch base next Saturday. Have a great one.
Appreciate it, man. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.